Today's guest is Kathleen Scheibley, who has a full-time private practice in Bernal Heights in San Francisco, as well as seeing patients online. She was the founder of the Bay Area Homeopathy Association in 2007, and Kathleen is the current president of the California Homeopathic Medical Society, which was founded in 1887. I found today's conversation with Kathleen absolutely inspiring, as she has done so much work to get homeopathy out into the community, and she has forged a way for homeopathy to shine within existing frameworks such as the Red Cross and the Fire Service. I hope today's conversation will inspire our listeners to also start asking questions about how you can help to get homeopathy alive and thriving in your local community. You can find out more about Kathleen at bernalhomeopathy.com. That's B-E-R-N-A-L homeopathy.com. Thanks for listening.
Welcome to the Homeopathy Hangout, where we discuss all things homeopathy from around the world. And now my mum and your host, Eugenie Kruger.
Hello, homies, and a very warm welcome to Homeopathy Hangout. Today, we get to chat with Kathleen Scheibley from San Francisco. Welcome to the show, Kathleen.
Thank you so much. I just want to say real quickly that I really, like so many people you've had on, but I really admire what you're doing. And I think you're doing a great job. And I hope you're taking care of yourself and not getting burnt out and doing this podcast. That's probably a separate podcast we could talk about. But but I just want to say, I think the whole community is appreciating what you're doing. So I hope you feel that.
Thank you so much. I am actually taking that on and taking it in, because that is one of the things that helps prevent burnout. If somebody's giving you a compliment, if somebody's giving you help, actually accepting it. And so with that in mind, I just want to give that also gratitude to you, because I don't know, is there anybody that likes asking for help? I certainly don't like asking for help. I'm trying to get a bit better at it. So in my homeopathy hangout podcast Facebook group, I put out the call a few times, and I've put it on the podcast asking people to help me produce with the payments of the show, because people don't realize it actually costs me a minimum of $100 to $120 to produce each show. And so it's cost me all up close to $20,000 to produce the show. Wow. So I'm really trying to get a handful of Patreons who are happy to donate $10 a month to just help me cover the cost of this. And I think people, you know, I get so many messages saying, thank you, thank you, thank you. And that's amazing. But if somebody can actually help me pay for this, it's amazing. And that is why, Kathleen, I'm so grateful to you being a Patreon of the show, actually like getting in there and supporting the show financially, because that is what helps prevent burnout.
Right.
And how this came about is that, you know, when people do the $10 Patreon, I give them a phone call and we get to have a chat. And the day that we had our chat, I actually had Amy, my clinic manager, in the car with me. And we had this amazing chat with you in the car. It was so fun. And then Amy and I were like, oh my God, we have to get you on the show, because my mind was blown with everything that you do for homeopathy. And I don't know how we should maybe do a separate podcast about burnout, because with everything that you do, I don't know. I would love to know how you prevent burnout. But do you know what? Let's take it right back to the beginning. How were you first introduced to homeopathy?
Yeah, well, like with so many of us, it really came into my world because of what it did for my kids. And both my son and my partner's son, my stepson, had some kind of medium level chronic health issues. And, you know, I had gone the conventional route and I knew nothing about alternative medicine at all. I was working as an engineer in Silicon Valley at the time. So my son was around 10 and had chronic glue ear, if you know what that is. Mm. And he had a lot of antibiotics when he was a baby and surgery for tubes and the whole deal. Mm. So then also developed asthma and eczema, as we know happens often. So I started kind of looking around, noticing he wasn't getting any better, and found an osteopath who was a local osteopath who was amazing. And that was cranial sacral was the first thing that helped him. And then when it didn't hold, she referred us to a local homeopath, Lynn Ferrugia, who's an amazing master homeopath. And she worked with a lot of kids. So within the first month, all three conditions for my son got so much better, one or two doses of a remedy. And so I had no idea what it was or what even he had really. I mean, although she had written it down, but it was before the internet was as big as it is now. So it wasn't as easy to look stuff up, maybe for the better.
In some cases, and then, for sure.
Yeah. And then, so around that same time, my partner's son had been struggling with a more serious health issue. 6 months prior, he had viral meningitis. And then after the meningitis, he had a sequela of chronic, severe migraines and nausea for 6 months. And he was actually out of school for 6 months. And so he wasn't getting any better either. UCSF kept saying, we don't know why he has this. It's not the meningitis anymore. So we decided, after my son did well with homeopathy, let's try take him in and like one or two doses of Nux Vomica. And within hours, but he was back in school the next following Monday with all of his energy back, no more headaches, no more nausea, and was just himself again. So it was a little shocking, to be honest, you know, and especially for me as an engineer, witnessing, even though I, again, didn't know what to make, I didn't know what homeopathy was at all at the time. So after that, I decided to pop by to a local school to find out more. And once I heard their kind of history of homeopathy and basically what it's about, I was like, wow, I have to study this and I have to practice someday. So it was then a long transition between, for me, because I was the breadwinner in the family and insurance here in the US, we have to, is typically through our paid work. So it was a long transition from full-time engineering to full-time homeopathy, but it was part-time with both for a long time, but it's been full-time homeopathy for quite a while now. So that was my journey.
I'm fascinated about how an engineering mind, if you get exposed to homeopathy, just talk to me about what was happening in your brain.
Yeah. Well, I think for the one thing that may not be obvious to a lot of people is that, and some of my scientist friends have pointed out this to me, is that engineering and like academic science are very different. Mm. We have to learn about physics. We learn about the traditional, you know, STEM sciences, differential equations, all that, thermodynamics, but it's an applied science. And so what we're always doing, even within that, is trying to, yes, we're applying science, but we're really trying to find something that works. We have to make things work. And so there's a lot of
people.
But in engineering, it's complex systems. And sometimes you are working more empirically to look at, when I'm doing this to the complex system, what's the result? And we think we can explain it often with the scientific mechanisms, but there's some black box stuff going on in a lot of technology.
So interesting. And what did your colleagues say when you started doing homeopathy or started talking to them about it?
I think they were like, most of them didn't know enough about it to say too much. They're like, Wow, that's just really different, you know? And I think they also knew my story around it. So they were just like, oh yeah, that's, you know, there's nothing like, as a parent, when you've seen your kids suffering with something and it affects all of your lives and your well-being, the whole family. There's nothing like then seeing something that just works. And there was no side effects. There was no sort of this dissonance in the beginning around, like, I remember having a feeling of like, wow, this seems expensive, because not understanding like, what can this potentially do for my kids? Like so many parents, I think, go through like, I'm going to try one more thing. It seems like a lot of money to see a homeopath, which is, I think, why the popularity with a lot of calls and things like that that people find on the internet, which I have really not a lot of judgment about, because I understand the kind of issues that it brings up for people. And I am passionate about accessibility of homeopathy. Even when I took my son, I was sort of annoyed that my homeopath only worked till 6 p.m. So I'm like, what am I supposed to do? But then I realized like, well, the same thing I do when I take my son to the doctor, I take time off work, but it is nice if people can be more flexible. So.
Is there any sort of, can you claim on your private medical insurance for homeopathy where you are?
For the most part, no. People can typically use their, what we call FSA, flexible spending account, for medical expenses a little more liberally. So that just saves them tax money on homeopathic expenses.
I really hope we can see that change one day, because really it's saving the government and the private healthcare institutions so much money if their people are using.
I know people who feel strongly on both sides of that argument, and it's complex, and especially here in the US where the insurance system has kind of contributed to the downfall of the medical system.
And that's a whole other, what happens over there. And I'm, I don't envy that medical system at all.
No.
So apart from your private practice, you are also a big advocate for homeopathy. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Sure.
And also what got you interested, why you feel that's important.
Yeah, sure. I'll talk about that a bit. And it's been a while now. So when I was in school still at the Pacific Academy of Homeopathy here in San Francisco, I remember having a meeting called by my head teacher, Richard Pitt, who was trying to get us to talk about, like, how can we get homeopathy out there more, and kind of brainstorming ways. And I can't even remember exactly what that meeting was about. But I got kind of fired up about, like, isn't there like a local association? Shouldn't we all know each other here in the Bay Area? Because I knew there were a lot of homeopaths at the time. And so he was like, well, there's study groups. And it just seemed to me like that was something you had to know somebody and you had to kind of fit with the group and they'd been together for a while or whatever. And I just thought, well, there should be something that people can just come into that's findable. And starting to be in the internet age and homeopathy. So I, with some colleagues and with Richard's help, got the Bay Area Homeopathy Association off the ground. That was in 2007. So again, it was a bit of a different time. And I think our first meeting, we had around 50 people showed up. And, you know, I heard all kinds of things like, you're not going to get people talking to each other who went to different schools or who practice different ways and stuff. But that wasn't true. And I felt like it was coming together in a spirit of big tent homeopathy. And like, we can all benefit more from more people knowing about homeopathy and for us knowing each other. So that, I mean, I really just do believe, I heard some of your other guests talk about this too, like there's a homeopath for everybody, right? So it really is so important to find the right match and the right style. And if we're all just more open about that and try to cross refer a lot to other homeopaths actually, and to other kinds of practitioners too. And so that was the start of Baha, and that's been a really successful, although since the pandemic we've lost steam, I will admit. So that was kind of homeopathy advocacy more within the homeopathic community, although we did do some public outreach. We did some like corporate health fairs together and did some small kind of what I call like peer case conferences that are very small scale, but like pretty interesting topics, because I think people feel a little more free to get creative and share how they really practice.
That's amazing. Do you find that sometimes people are a little bit like homeopaths are a little bit hesitant to say exactly how they practice? Because I found, I'm not so much anymore, but I have found that if I am speaking with somebody who I know is really classical, I've had some guests on the show and I know they're very classical, very strong about a particular way, then I do find myself almost being a little bit quiet because I do feel that there is a little bit of judgment. But I also notice that in myself and I'm like, no, but that's not what I want. So I need to like speak up. It's interesting that we, I don't know, homeopaths are an interesting bunch. I think we have issues too. Incredibly, we're not perfect.
We're not. And as we all know, homeopathy has been so marginalized in the broader culture for so long that I think lots of people feel protective of it. And they feel, you know, I think that out of that comes the seed of like, we have to do it perfectly and we have to do it the right way. And I am a classical homeopath, but I do have like respect for if people are getting results and they're practicing in an ethical way. I think we should all be sharing that with one another, because in the real world, there are so many more people who are just buying the remedies and trying it themselves over the counter because they don't find any of what we're doing accessible to them, or they don't even know that we exist, to be honest.
Exactly.
That's the majority. So,
Talk to me. I know when we were chatting in the car and you were telling me and Amy about, especially the underserved communities that you help, I was like, this is the type of stuff that people need to hear about. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
I would love to, sure. Well, I think I did around maybe 2 or 3 years after I started Baha, I was getting into private practice, and I decided pretty much at the start to start offering a free clinic for seniors, elders in my neighborhood. So I talked to the local neighborhood center, that which is kind of like a senior activity center, about whether I could do it there, because I thought accessibility wise, that's where they are. And it just so happened that the Filipino man who I spoke with that day had an interest in providing some alternatives for the seniors. He really believed that they should have a range of healing available to them. And he observed like a lot of them are really struggling health-wise. So he put me in touch with the director, and I did a presentation on homeopathy, and she agreed. And it was like very easy for them, because I showed up with some kits. Here in California, we're a health freedom state, which means we have some protection as long as we disclose, we have people read about and sign what our training is, that we're not a medical doctor, brief description of what homeopathy is. And so in that way, as long as we are upfront with all of that, we can practice legally without as much threat of practicing medicine without a license, charges, and things like that.
Wonderful.
So yeah, that made it also easier for me to think about doing something like that. But I do believe, in addition to working with the underserved, bringing homeopathy out into the world more. Like, often we're in our little, now we're on screens, or we're in our alone in our offices and hoping people find us, right? Through websites or through signs or word of mouth, but which are all great ways. But yeah, and what I found with the seniors there, it's a lot of immigrant population in my neighborhood. And a lot of them are from countries that homeopathy is very prevalent, such as Brazil, Mexico, places all over the world, really, in my neighborhood. So it was an interesting experience. I still offer that, but no longer at the center since the pandemic. So we do remote once a month. So that was really kind of my first foray into that. But based on that model, a few years ago, I saw a request for proposals from another community center, the next neighborhood over in the Excelsior District. And that was Community Well. And they have a really great model of trying to provide various healing modalities for people in that neighborhood, which is more also immigrant and underserved people. And I presented it to them based on the one that I had been doing with the seniors. And I proposed me and another homeopath who spoke Spanish could both be available. And so they actually accepted it. And we were paid for that clinic for 2.5 years through the San Francisco sugary drink stacks. Which is so ironic.
I have got full over body goosebumps. That is so cool. Can you tell us a little bit about what that model looks like? And I'm just thinking of the other homeopaths that are listening to this and maybe have thought that it's a little bit too hard. If we can kind of be shown that it has been done, I feel that that's like, oh, it's been done. Okay, sure. Let's give it a go.
Exactly. And I love this type of model because it does a lot of nice things for homeopathy, which I think we need help with. Such as if you're working within a community center, obviously it's really amazing if you can get paid for that work. That's the main thing that makes it work for a lot of people. And I was adamant that I wasn't going to do a lot more of that work unless I was getting paid something to make it sustainable. So no, that I fleshed out for them, like, here's how it looks. We would be able to have, I think we proposed a 3-hour clinic, and we could do like maybe one intake per, and then like several follow-ups per, and online scheduling and stuff like that. We basically manage it as our own practice. So we do our own intake forms. They don't see our paperwork as far as the medical records. The HIPAA compliance would be in effect. We had to have professional liability insurance to work there, which I know not all homeopaths invest in. So things like that, that have to be a little more, you know, buttoned up. But so they reviewed that proposal and also knew that I had been doing it for many years, over 10 years at another neighborhood center. So it was kind of, in a way, a proven like idea, and it was very popular. And so they were excited just to give it a shot. And so it was, and unfortunately it was, we started it like 3 months before the pandemic. And their little community center was meant to be a thriving in-person hub And because San Francisco really locked down, we had to pivot and do a lot of it online. But we did go in and offer either in person or online, depending on what the person's preference was after about the first, I think, like 4 or 5 months of the pandemic. So we tried to keep it really accessible, and it was really popular. It was booked out the whole time.
Wow.
And so I think it was also showing that with this different population, who most of them could never afford our services for regular rates, they were interested, they showed up, they came back, and they were issued some basic survey. It wasn't a very good, like, MyMop type of survey, but it was a really basic, do you think this helped you kind of survey. And it was a really overwhelmingly positive response. So I think
it's like you're reading my mind. I just wrote down survey because I was going to ask you that, whether there was a survey. Well, that's wonderful.
Yeah, the city required the same survey be filled out for all the things. And we were really the only healthcare thing, I think, other than things like food as medicine class and yoga and move more together outside class and stuff like that.
That's really cool. And was it you that told me about the Red Cross thing as well?
Yes.
Oh, I was sitting somebody. Somebody told me about the Red Cross thing. I think it was one of the guests on the show, but I can't remember who it was. But then that suddenly I just called. That was you. Talk to us about that.
Yeah. Yeah. So the Integrative Healers Action Network was a group of integrative healers that formed together in response to the 2017 Tubbs wildfire in Sonoma County in Northern California. And so it was a really severe fire. It was the first time, well, probably not the first time ever, but the first time in kind of modern history where such a devastating fire came into essentially wine country and burned people's homes. It was very scary. It was very scary for that community. And that's not directly my community, but it's very close. It's about an hour and a half north of San Francisco. So a lot of people, and we certainly felt the effects, you know, the smoky skies and that sort of thing. We all know people who live up there pretty much. So there's a kind of ripple effect happening. And a lot of the people in the integrative healing, there's a lot of integrative healers in Northern California, first of all. It's a culture of integrative medicine, and it has been for many decades. Mm-hmm. If you think about the 60s and what all came out of that, some of it was an appreciation for alternative and complementary medicines. So there's just a lot of us, like all the communities, wanted to find a way when it's affecting directly your community to help. And a naturopathic doctor in Sonoma County, Jennifer Regal, and Jenny Harrow, she has studied integrative medicine more broadly. She practices forest bathing. She does more administrative type of work within the integrative medical field. They got really determined to try to come up with a solution to organize all these healers who wanted to help. And so they created like a Facebook page. They were doing a Google sheet and trying to get people organized. And finally, they went to the local Red Cross. The National Red Cross hadn't come yet because they were dealing with another disaster. I think it was an oil spill. And so the local Red Cross said, sure, you can come and operate within our facility and be alongside of us and do what you do. Because I think the local Red Cross in that area was very sort of in that culture as well. So it was kind of synchronicity. And by the time the National Red Cross showed up, they sort of looked and said, what is going on? And they said, we would not have said yes to this, but now that we see it, we get it. And it's amazing that you're helping people in this really all these ways. So since then, it wasn't until the following year that I was able to engage with them about homeopathy, because at first they decided just to work with medically licensed people for the sake of interfacing with the Red Cross. They got a little more sophisticated, got a memorandum of understanding in place with the Red Cross. And so the Red Cross gave them the kind of authority to screen and run their nonprofit according to how they saw fit, like who is the qualifications of our providers kind of thing. So they put a system in place to just do simple background checks, check people's certifications or licensures, and do a little bit of training before people sign up to volunteer. So it's a little bit more complex than just show up and pitch in. And so I think not everybody understands that about this nonprofit, but they're really also passionate about providing trauma-informed care. And so really grounding people in on some ethics and some norms. And they've learned, I've been with them since 2018 in a very kind of as what they call their ambassador for homeopathy, which means I answer any questions homeopath volunteers have or potential volunteers have. I've helped to create the training that's specific to homeopaths for that work. And then they have some group, they have some training that everybody does, which is about trauma-informed care. We have some cultural awareness, cultural competency training. It's a lot for volunteer work, but it is an amazing experience and it has changed my practice probably more than anything else.
And what's
just going
way?
Well, I mean, going, first of all, going and just being in some of those crisis environments year after year and witnessing what's happening with the people we're serving, also what's happening with all of the volunteers. Some of the volunteers, their own households were getting evacuated as we're volunteering. So there's just a tremendous amount of trauma happening and fear typically, but there's also this resilience. So every time we talk about difficulty, and this is holds true in homeopathy too, right? In the broader sense, you talk about where the challenge is, there's this force of resilience coming as well. Sometimes it does take a healing for that to happen, but I do think people, of course they do. We all have natural, tremendous capacity for resilience. For survival and also for growth through some of these experiences. And it has been nonstop since then, pretty much, both with the wildfires. We have had a little bit of a break the last couple of years, just locally, not on the West Coast. It continues, but we decided like our purview would be more locally for now until and unless they get additional funding. So we kind of work within a certain region. And it's also taught me about things like just the simplicity of looking at what's in front of you to look at what needs to be cured or helped here. What are we trying to do here for this person right now? And people often ask me like, is that acute care or is it chronic care? Because you see often people who are vulnerable to getting evacuated sometimes are the most vulnerable people, who would have had a lifetime of challenges and so probably complex trauma in their history. So with the acute situation, it's triggering chronic trauma states.
Exactly.
And so it's really complex, but also trauma tends to intensify things. And so you can kind of in a way see things more clearly from a homeopathic standpoint, right? We see a lot of presentation of many different kinds of trauma remedies and some basic kind of Polycrest remedies as well. So I think it's just taught me just to one, when the importance of settling our own nervous systems when we're working with trauma, whether or not we're in an acute trauma situation, whether we're sitting in our office, there can be that kind of entanglement that happens. And so ways of helping to ground the patient or the client beyond the homeopathic remedy. And that's something that IHAN has also trained us in. And we've learned from HeartMath has some great information about learning about just basic grounding and breathing techniques. And then also not treating people for very long in those kind of situations. We basically have like a 20-minute max rule because people's nervous system get overloaded. And especially if they're then going to do multiple modalities, it's too much.
That's really cool. And I remember when you said to me and Amy, when we're driving the car, you said about this Red Cross thing. I'm like, it's just something I never would have thought of, somebody I would have thought about partnering with. And hearing that possibility, hearing that somebody's already done that, I feel it just opens up this floodgate of possibilities. So I'm really excited for the other homeopaths listening to this or people who can kind of help to make this happen, start those conversations happening of who else can we partner with? Where else can we piggyback on? Like we don't always have to start everything from scratch. If there's an existing framework in place, where can we just cooperate and work together in that? And that's often like my dream is to have homeopathy back in the hospitals because we used to have 5 homeopathic hospitals in Australia and they closed down in the 1950s. But not having a homeopathic hospital, that's not my dream. It's to have homeopathic back in existing hospitals, because to create that new framework, there's so much work, so much money. I really despise reinventing the wheel. And with anything, I always feel like there's a good existing framework. Just go and use that alongside the two, you know, they can work together.
That's true. And I think that's a great point. And it is part of the reason why I got so excited about this model, because it's that thing of meeting people where they're at for other services already and where they feel. Now, I know the Red Cross has some criticisms associated with it. I don't know the full history. I understand and I see some of the issues, but I will say that for all of that, I mean, it is still this tremendous resource, and it is where people know to go for basic conventional care, basic resources, safety, shelter. And so in that way, when something like that has happened, you do want to be providing a container for what we're doing. Mm-hmm. You don't want to be setting up some table, handing out little white pills on the corner when people don't know what we're doing or giving them. Like, if people have a feeling of like, I'm within this place that feels somewhat legitimate and safe, we have more of an ability to talk about that. We're still not going to get explained very much probably about what we do to somebody who's in that state, but you want to give them as much resources as possible so they can know afterwards, if I got help from this for my pain or for my dissociation or whatever it is, where can I find this? Because we don't want people feeling like, I don't know, some lady over there gave me, I don't know what, you know?
Well, and the other thing is, I wish we can just across the board in all facets of life, stop this good and bad, because nobody is inherently purely good or purely bad. And I don't think any organization is purely good and purely bad. I mean, whether you talk about Facebook or Google or PayPal or any, or Red Cross, any organization, no person, like humans are not, none of us are all good and all bad. It's yin yang. We have a little bit of everything in us, and you don't have to throw out the baby with the bathwater or completely write something off because it's not 100% perfect. Nothing in life is. So it's kind of like seeing the good in there and that, and then building on that. And you know, it's really
absolutely tricky. I fully agree with you. And also, what we're doing isn't perfect. I know that's blasphemy, but
it goes without saying. Obviously, like for example, would be a homeopath who doesn't know when a case is outside of their scope of practice and continues on with something when they should be cross referring. So, of course, we're not all good and bad, or not all good either. There was something else I wanted to ask you about specifically with the Red Cross on the car. You were mentioning that some of the work you did was with the volunteers after the event. And that was something that really struck me, because that's something that doesn't get talked about. You have all these volunteers who's witnessed all these horrific things, and then the disaster is over, and then they kind of are expected to carry on with their life. But in reality, that's not really how it works. So what were you guys doing in that capacity?
Yeah. So after the Tubbs fire in the 2017, I believe Jennifer Regal, one of the founders, the naturopathic doctor, her family has first responders in it. And so she has some familiarity with the specific issues they face. And she could see it happening at the time as well. And so she felt passionate about then offering to have a specific clinic for the firefighters and first responders. And they were open to it and interested. And so that started a relationship that continues to this day, where we go back to certain communities that have been hit year after year with these challenges, and work specifically, like we do work specifically with the Volunteer Firefighter Foundation in Sonoma County. It's really through them. And now they have some grant funding as well. So we have for the first time gotten some compensation for that work.
Wow.
But that's a monthly clinic. We go to different firehouses and we have the clinic in the firehouse. And the amazing thing, Eugenie, about that is I have witnessed a transformation of those firefighters. And I feel like it's the beginning of a cultural shift locally with this kind of very tough, in some ways, of course, it has to be tough culture, But there's a lot that they bring and tend to attract, I think, from the broader culture around this invincibility and keeping going and talking about burnout. Like, it's an incredibly stressful, and it went from volunteer firefighting, so they have other jobs typically as well, being a little more manageable pre-2017, to just being this kind of explosion of a feeling of responsibility to respond all over the state because you have the skill set and you have the tools. Mm-hmm. So it's just witnessing the state of health of some of those folks, but then also watching them start to, again, it's about meeting them where they are and then destigmatizing the need to get help mm-hmm. and the need to take care of oneself. Sort
Aren't
of almost
we weird? Humans are so weird. Why? Who was the first? But like, I always think, like, where did it all start? I think that's the homeopath in me. How do we get to a point where we ever thought that it was okay to make somebody feel bad about asking for help? We're so weird.
Humans. That is a whole other topic as well. I think it's the kind of a Western thing. Mm. And there are some other things that I think it is part of what may be shifting about this new time we're in, because we see the way that our major institutions and the culture behind it are not serving so many people, right? Mm. It's not just that the system is wrongly incentivized and it's kind of breaking down, but also people just can't exist in these systems anymore. People are breaking apart as well. But yeah, I've watched the firefighters have also had some training available to them for self-care and like learning about some alternative modalities and how they can detox. And so they're all getting IR saunas in their firehouses now and just all very interested in all of it. And what can I do to take care of myself? And that is brand new. And it's regardless, seems to me that maybe the younger folks are more passionate about it. The older generation are kind of following them and watching them and saying, wow, you guys are really onto something here. So they come as a group and they see their community trying yoga therapy, trying all these things aromatherapy that you might not imagine, you know, firefighters doing and trying, including homeopathy. But it really is just about being there. Like, we're here to help you. You all have been helping the community. So it does feel kind of like a mutual aid kind of feeling.
That's so cool. I'm just thinking, like, the remedy Fumaro, which is made from smoke, and the remedy Palmo, which is made from healthy lung tissue. That's something that they should actually just put in the firefighters' water in their fire station. And so they're all like getting that dosing. I actually did voluntary rural firefighting in New Zealand for a couple of years, which is how I got the scar on my nose.
Wow.
And
That's awesome.
I have zero trauma from that. It was just the most amazing experience. The only trauma would be from cleaning all the fire hoses, which they don't tell you about. I did it for the exercise and with meeting new people, and it was fun. And I was in a type of job where as soon as my little beeper went off, that I could just race to the fire station and go and help out any time of the day. And I was single. And so it was just the perfect job for me and great people. But oh my God, nobody tells you in the advertising about all those bloody hoses that you have to go clean afterwards. And we got helicopter rides. We had to be helicoptered into rural destinations to then go and find a creek, to then get the pumps going, to get some water. It was just an incredible experience. And then our fire station master, he was saying that he's never smoked a day in his life, but he's got the lungs of somebody who's smoked a 20 pack of cigarettes daily. And it's just so unfair, because whenever they do surveys of the most trusted profession in the world, you know, firefighters are one of the most trusted profession above police officers and everything else. The ultimate selfless act, I think, being a firefighter. Yeah. And for them, for their health, for them to pay such a high price for doing so much in the community. I've got a best friend, her and her husband are both career firefighters as well. Mm. I have so much love and respect for these people. And it's not fair that their bodies would need to suffer that much for them to do this incredible role. So to have all these different therapies that they can use to support their bodies is beautiful. And I really hope that more firefighters hear that. And maybe it's something like you've already made me think, and one of the ladies that used to work with me, her husband's a firefighter, and I'm already thinking I should get in touch with her and seeing if there's something that we can do to support them, and just starting to have that conversation. But within myself, as I'm saying this, I'm like, oh, I've got, you know, why would you even start that conversation, especially here in Australia, where nobody even knows what it is? Have you got any tips for anyone listening to this? How would you even go about having that conversation?
Well, my advice, kind of along the lines that I was talking about with community well, is that it's so much better when we can be a part of a framework that is a team, is an integrative team. Because I think that one, I do think homeopathy on its own would be amazing. But I think because it is something that so few people know about, it's also like with IHAN, one of the founders is a naturopathic doctor and she went to Bastyr. And so she had some training in homeopathy. Although like many naturopaths, she said, you know, I know a little bit, I don't know enough to kind of do what you do. So, you know, I basically don't practice it. But she said, I know enough about the potential with it for trauma. Like she recognized the bigger picture with homeopathy, which I thought was actually pretty amazing for someone who was like, I don't really practice it. But she said right away, like pretty much like, we need this. Like we need this in the toolkit or the therapy team. And so having someone who can recognize and advocate, and there's strength in numbers, I guess is what I'm saying. And when you can offer a range, and it's also true that like when we show up, so there's an acupuncturist there. It's funny that like a lot of the firefighters are afraid of needles, believe it or not. But everybody sees that there's massage and or chiropractic. Yeah. And they come for that. Mm. And then when they hear about some of the other modalities, they're like, okay, I'm open to trying that. So it's also interesting to like, again, kind of like holding people where they have some like level of comfort with some things, but then maybe they can learn about some new things. And
said that, because I do know several chiropractors over here, and it might be worth actually just having a conversation with one of them first, and maybe some massage. We've got a couple of massage therapists in our clinic, but maybe having that conversation with them first and then kind of going in as a team and saying, you know, this person's available for massage therapy, chiropractic, and we've got the homeopathy. And yeah, I really like that idea.
Just having like a day where you have a clinic and people can kind of, I think too, when they see more things happening, it draws different people in for different reasons. And it's okay. Like, oh, it feels more like you guys all came together to hold space for us. Yeah. And so, you know.
I like it. Okay. You're really setting the creative juices going now. That's good. Very, very cool. I've had this dream. I've never actually talked about it on the show before, but you've just made me, because I kind of feel like I should mention it. My husband and I have been working on this for about 7 years, but it's just that, I know, it's just that the timing, like he's got the IT skills of making it all work. And I've, you know, got the connections to make it work, but we just haven't got the finances to kind of kick it into gear just yet. But providing healthcare, like online free healthcare, just getting a bunch of homeopaths together, and not just homeopaths, all healthcare modalities. So the idea, and anybody else is welcome to steal this idea, you have my permission, because the more, I think we couldn't set up enough of these organizations to help everyone in the world. So if anybody gets an idea from this and wants to run with it, please do. That you set up a framework where you have anybody who practices online or in person and wants to offer an hour or two of their time for free per week. And you get all these practitioners together and create like an online network where people can go and just find out, okay, who can I go book with free of charge? And especially for low income families that don't have access to natural medicine. That's kind of like the rough framework of it. But I've got a couple of pro bono clients who I care for. And I know most practitioners, most healthcare practitioners have X amount of hours that they tend to set aside pro bono. And if you're not doing that, I think you should. That's part of that tithing, you know, kind of getting 10% of your income or your time or whatever. But more of us coming together and seeing how we can do this as a team. I really like that message that you're bringing across, because that's really important. And I'm a networker like you, like naturally, I want to get people together because there's strength in numbers. And we don't know everything by ourselves. Like you get ideas from others, and homeopathy, especially as a profession, I think we tend to work very solo. I'm seeing that changing beautifully now with so many homeopaths starting to work in networks together.
Oh,
but
good.
So much. I mean, I've seen that. I'm just thinking of Angelica Lemke. That's got her team of homeopaths. Rita Cara Robinson's got a team of homeopaths. Alan Freestone, Ren Lloyd. I've got four homeopaths on my team. I'm seeing more of that starting to happen. Yeah. So, maybe reaching out to other modalities as well and just creating more of that network.
It's been an incredible experience to work as a part of an integrative team. And I just learn something every time about, you know, about the kind of space that we're creating. And again, mm-hmm. creating this feeling of safety and community. Mm-hmm. And kind of people will say, like, I feel like cared for when I come here. Mm-hmm. And I think that is about, again, kind of seeing how we are a community, but we're trying to hold space for them as a community. Mm-hmm. And that happens in person, and it happens mm-hmm. with people who feel connected and respect for each other and mm-hmm. who don't feel like we're competing against each other for, you know, modalities of patients and clients. We're like mm-hmm. all speaking with each other and like kind of handing one person off. Do you think this person's okay now to have mm-hmm. massage, or no, they need to go, you know, sit and mm-hmm. settle.
Yeah, I think that scarcity mindset, if we as a collective race can get rid of that scarcity mindset, which is just a delusion on all fronts, I think
yes.
that will solve a lot of problems.
I do think that's starting to happen. I think some things, I do think that things have, like you can look at it a couple different ways. One is things have gotten so challenging for so many people, you know, with all of these things happening in the world, but also medicine and all of our systems kind of breaking down. That's how I feel what's mm. happening right now. And you can look at it that way, but you can also see, again, the resilience side. People are no longer standing for, you know, basically being bullied, being, I don't want to say colleagues in conventional medicine who are amazing people doing great work. But I think that, again, all of the systems that are wrongly incentivized are not working for even the people who work within them, you know? And so lots of people can see how this is just sort of breaking apart. But what I hear is from my clients, especially in the last year or two since the pandemic, is just, I don't know if it's the care is so much worse, and we know there are shortages in healthcare workers, and there was a hard time during the pandemic as well, and just so much trauma, as well as people are in worse state going into the system. People are really struggling. Mm. Also, I think people are sensitized now to feeling their vulnerabilities in a way. Mm. So no longer kind of tolerating some of the behaviors that happen.
Yeah.
And so I've said this before, but I do think we're coming up on a medical Me Too moment where a lot of people are suddenly like, this doesn't work for me anymore, you know, and noticing. I mean, like young people noticing like, this isn't okay, you know? And so, but they don't know what else to do. They're like, that doesn't work for me. So I'm just noticing that it feels like this huge tidal wave of people, you know, and again, it doesn't necessarily mean that all what we're offering is accessible to those same people, but I do think that people are looking for solutions and ways to make that happen, because they're like, why can't we have access to all of this? Mm. Why can't we have access to things that don't harm us first before we have to go in and try X, Y, and Z that nobody told me what the potential consequences were.
Exactly.
But anyway, so I do think though, there's some good things happening with this time of great challenge comes a great opportunity, right?
Mm.
I mean, like with IHAN, like with Community Well, it's like, I didn't imagine these things could come into being, but I do think in part that part of it is people are ailing. And there are also issues of trust, you know, and safety. I think people are looking for more relational, more care-based solutions. And we often assume that's naturally what we provide. But in reality, like, we have to assure people of that. We have to come into relationship, in my opinion, we have to make sure we're coming into relationship with people in a way that communicates to them that we don't have a very hierarchical relationship, because to a lot of people, I mean, we just are like another doctor, you know?
Exactly.
And we don't really, here in the US anyway, we don't have a very diverse population of homeopaths. to serve a diverse population of potential, you know, clients. So that is something I wish we could work on.
Yeah, over here as well. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of Asian clients, and there's a few of them that have kind of hinted at wanting to study homeopathy. One of them is now studying it, but I always say to them, you have to do it for your culture, for people of your background who identify with you, because, you know, you can tell me about what it's like to grow up as an Asian in Australia. But I can't on a deep level understand exactly what that would have been like for you, or what your parents that were immigrants that came over, what they would have gone through, and hence the generational trauma that would have been put onto you, or all that. You can tell me that, I can read stories about it, but I will never intimately understand it like you do. And you need to go and study homeopathy and serve your community and in their language, that they will, that they can express themselves in, you know, like my heart breaks when I have got clients from all cultures and I can see them searching for words to express their meaning. And because I'm bilingual as well, I think I understand, I understand that part of it, where there's some words in Afrikaans that there's no way I could ever, nothing in English language ever conveys that feeling. It's mostly swear words. We have great swear words in Afrikaans, but no other English words are going to convey exactly that feeling that, you know, that needs to be there. And that's why we need people of all colors, cultures, backgrounds, beliefs, ways of prescribing. We need all of it so you can really find that true resonance with your practitioner. And
And I think the trust thing is a big issue, you know, that goes unspoken, because there's a bit of a power dynamic of course there is happening. And so I think just for all of us, I feel part of what our work is in coming into this new time that we're in now is like, how can we embrace these ideas, like, and continue to evolve homeopathy to this bigger vision, to our own inherent biases? You know, we don't know until we work on that stuff, right? Like anybody. So I've been engaged in doing some of that work as well these past few years, especially with everything that's been coming up in the United States. So, there's a lot there. And that's, you know, I feel like, again, it's a time of tremendous change and opportunity, but it also needs to be a time, in my opinion, of reckoning with the legacy of all of our systems, the legacy of racism here in the United States, the legacy of what we've done to the environment and continue to do to the environment, to the planet. So, you know, there's a lot there, and I think people can get overwhelmed with it and like, what can we do? We're just going to keep doing the work that we do, right? And it's, yes, it is. But also I think it's like with homeopathic healing, right? What are we doing? We're just witnessing the state. I mean, we witness the state to find the remedy, but the remedy really is just witnessing the state of the person as well, right? Just kind of matching. And I think that culturally and societally and around the globe, and especially for us, like here in the US, you know, in this kind of dominant Western culture that we have, we need to hold up a mirror and see, like, what is our state? What have we been doing? Because it's not until we fully reckon with that that we're going to be able to heal and move on, right? Or heal and move into something that's freer, better, more empowering for everyone, you know.
Well, I was going to ask you what your final message is, but that sounds like a pretty good one. But do you have a final message that you want to leave out with? And can you also tell them how to get hold of you?
I guess I'm covering a lot of different ideas, but really I do feel like we have a tremendous opportunity right now to really kind of evolve ourselves and evolve homeopathy in real time. I mean, I feel like that's what we have the opportunity to do for each of our client, or, you know, hold space for them to do, really, each of them as well. But it's all happening together, right? We're not just doing something for them. We're also like in it and trying to meet this moment we're in and all of the intensity that it has, and stay out of burnout, as we talked about in the beginning, So I think we need new strategies. We need to be more proactive about our own self-care and boundaries. We need to be more honest with one another within the homeopathic community. Like, it's not until we start to really just get really clear and honest and real, which I feel like I've had to do within these frameworks, because people, again, there's so much now that it really is, there's an intensity to it. So in a way, it's just like, let's just get real with each other. And, you know, I think it is, the other thing I'll say is I feel like it's super important to be working on empowerment of our clients, you know, working on ways of reflecting back to them what we're doing and creating, you know, frameworks of understanding for what homeopathy is and can do that's just really practical to them. So in that way, just constantly trying to connect them to the process in a way that's empowering for them. Because I think that's part of this shift that we're experiencing here in the Bay Area. There's the concept of decolonizing medicine, which is really about breaking down the hierarchy and trying to create more of an equal, open, kind of consent-based care for people. And I think that's going to be key to success for medicine in the future. So I think we're actually pretty lucky to be alive right now, because it's a really amazing time to be alive. And I'm hopeful about the role homeopathy can play in the future.
Yay. And how can people get hold of you, Kathleen?
Yeah, well, my private practice website is bernalhomeopathy.com. So I guess you'll put that in the show notes.
Yeah.
That's probably the best way, because I think my email is there and phone number and stuff. So I'm happy to chat with people. Please reach out if you're interested to chat.
Amazing. Thank you so much. It was lovely to chat with you. That hour just flew by. I couldn't actually believe it when I looked at the time, and I was like, holy moly. It's beautiful chatting with you. And thank you so much for your inspiration today. You've got me thinking. I'm just so many new ideas.
Well, let's chat again sometime, to the two of us.
Amazing. Absolutely. And thank you so much for your support of the podcast as well.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you for the great work you're doing, Eugenie.
Such a pleasure.